thank you so much for joining me. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. As if that isn't difficult enough, it's still not ready. It has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly when it gets out of the cocoon. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I am excited to share Reed Miles with you. Reed is going to share his story of starting off in the IT world and all the way to where he is now being the number two rated autism podcast on, is it FeedSpot? Am I saying that right?
Well, actually, now it's number four. Someone bumped me down to number four.
Oh, well, we're going to just say number two because we know you're going to get back there or even to number one. And I was lucky enough to be on his show last week. And so this is him being reciprocal to me. And I so appreciate that. For those who are watching me and who normally watch me, you see that my background is very different today. I am in a hotel speaking at a conference this week. And I wanted to continue to do the live stream as normal. So I found a quiet spot. And so you get a different background for me today. So finally, without further ado, Reed, thank you so much for being here. Today.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Shelley.
I'm so glad to have you. So we had a good talk on yours last week, and I hope that I remember some of the key points that you said to me that I wanted to bring out again today. No problem. So first of all, just tell us your story.
I hope your listeners and you have enough time because it's a long story.
We have plenty of time.
Well, my story started out being that my family knew nothing about autism at the time. We knew it existed. We knew Asperger's was around, but we knew nothing about it. Until about my late 20s, I had family members, one who was a family lawyer, one who was a psychiatrist, and one who was a psychologist. And even my primary care doctor, all had told my mother and my father that they think that I have the traits of high-functioning autism. So that kind of turned that light on above their heads, saying, oh, that explains a lot of what and why he does what he does. Like, interrupt them when they're telling a story to let them know that they had something wrong, or why I've taken apart my father's tools just to see how they work. I mean, what's funny about this is I don't remember ever taking apart my father's tools, but it's a story that my mom used to tell me all the time. And then through time, so we knew I had autism. So it was now a struggle of trying to find work and try to find my place. I was in the IT industry, as you mentioned, and our job had been downsized. And the company moved out of state. So now I was struggling to find work. So I decided at one point, you know, I'm going to go and get my bachelor's degree. So I went, have you ever gone online, like on Facebook, and filled out an application or a form or something and not thought anything about it?
Yes.
Well, that happened to me. And I didn't hear anything about it. And then a month later, I get a call. Hi, this is so-and-so. Are you still interested in going to school? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, we are in the midst of going through all the applications. Why don't you write your college entry letter and send it in and then I'll get it to the board before they go adjourn. So I wrote a letter, and in my letter I wrote how I was like the black sheep of the family. My parents got their bachelor's degrees in their 50s. My brothers got his associates. And I was the only one at the time without a college degree. And I didn't want to be that way, so I sent them that email. And then maybe an hour or two later, I get a call saying, Hi, congratulations. You have been accepted to the Colorado University, Colorado Technical University online. So it was a 4-year online school, and I graduated with a 3.02 average, which was different for me because I was really a C student in high school.
Oh, okay.
And then I still struggled after that. Now, I figured maybe I had a degree. I can people say, oh, he's got a degree in the IT field. He's got some skills. Nothing. So 4 years later, 2014, same thing. I filled out this little... No, same thing. I was at the... it's like, it just happened. We were at the vet with our doc, and we heard the girl behind the desk talking about this organization called Across the Pond. They help you go to school and get you familiarized with schools in Europe, in Great Britain. So I went through, and I'm walking out, and I look to my mother. I go, I have nothing to worry about. I have no limits holding me back. All I have is my family and my friends. I don't have a job. My mom's like, you got nothing to worry about. My mom has always been a firm believer in saying, nothing's written in stone.
It's a good saying.
And as many people know, that means nothing is permanent. If you're not happy, you can turn around and come home. Well, to me, that was reassuring, but also in my mind is I wanted to prove a lot of people wrong because I had a lot of friends at the time who said, I'm wasting my time going back for my master's degree. So I stayed the full year, graduated, not with a master's, but with a postgraduate certificate, which is the same thing minus a couple of credits. So I come home, graduated with a new bachelor's degree, and I still can't find work. I start volunteering. My mom's like, you can't just sit around doing nothing. I want you to be productive in your life. So I start thinking about volunteering. I love science, so I apply to volunteer at the Adler Planetarium. They accepted me, and I enjoy it. And then through time, I got in trouble. And
what kind of trouble?
Well, the first time a girl had literally reported me for sexual harassment when all I did was put my arm around her and congratulate her for getting a promotion on her job.
Oh, wow.
Instead of telling me, Reed, that I feel a little uncomfortable with your arm around me, right. And I could have said, oh, I'm sorry. Second time, I must have jokingly said something to a kid, to one of the other volunteers, and he took it offensively and reported me. And they moved me from where I was comfortable and happy to what they call their theater department, which has no windows to the outside world.
Oh.
So I was going down this like real hill of depression, and all they had me do was go through photos of their events and mm-hmm. label the emotions of each of the group. And I kept saying to myself, this is chimp's work. A chimpanzee can do this. And I was on my day off one day, and I get a call saying, Reed, we'd like you to come in. And I'm like, I'm not coming into my day off. If you want something, you either call me and tell me. She's like, well, I would still like you to come in. I'm like, no, I'm not coming into my day off. She's like, okay. And I knew what they wanted. They were going to let me go. And I said, you know what? I know what this is about. And if you're going to let me go, then I can tell you this right now. I quit. I'm done. I'm not going to let you have the benefit of the doubt. Now, the funny thing about this whole situation is I messaged the kid that reported me originally and saying, how could you do this? It was a joke. You know, I was just joking around. He went to the HR woman at the Adler, and I was like, and she's like, you know, all communications have to go through her. I'm like, you don't understand how things work. Once you let someone go, I don't have to go for you anymore. Uh-huh. It's a free world now. I don't deal with you anymore. You are out of the picture. You have no control over me. You let go of one of the best people there.
Good for you.
And then after that, at that time, I was also volunteering at our field museum. And I was having fun there until our volunteers kept reporting that I was standing too close to them, and they didn't like that. So they let me go. So at that time, my mom's like, you know something? You have a lot to offer everybody. You've been to Europe. You've traveled through 6 countries all on your own. You've gotten your master's degree from in England, and you just have a wealth of information. Why don't you start a blog? So I started my blog, and it didn't get the recognition it should have gotten. And I feel that those who were reading it weren't feeling the true warmth and knowing that I was coming from a solid place. I was getting good messages. I mean, I remember I had this one message from this kid who said he's battling stage 4, I think, colon cancer. And he's autistic, but he's not writing about him. He's writing about his sister, who's also autistic, that their father hasn't let her go outside, and he wants to let him know that he should let her go and see and experience the world, because there are bad people, but there are also good people as well. And then after that, I figured, you know, there's only one way that people are going to know that I'm sincere, and that's the podcast. They can hear it in my voice. They can see me on the video, and I started my podcast. My first episode, I was so nervous. It was just me, and I tried to do it alone, and I tried to do it on one of the hardest topics, which is depression, and I just couldn't get it out. So I asked my life coach what I should do, and he's like, you know, maybe you should get guests on, and then it becomes a bounce back. You have someone you can bounce back and forth with to make you feel more comfortable. My first guest was a woman who had 2 kids who were autistic, and it was just the 2 of us talking about her and her kids and everything, and then from there it went on and on and on to experts and to where I am today.
Awesome. And so how many episodes of your podcast have you put out already?
Well, if you combine both shows I do, I'd say about 130.
Wow. Okay. And how many years have you been doing this?
3.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. You can probably see down at the bottom of the screen that you are episode 156 of my live stream. And I've been doing it approximately the same amount of time. I've had some weeks where a guest can't show up or I couldn't get one scheduled, and you know, that happens, but I try to do them every week. And I enjoyed this format a whole lot more than just trying to put something out on my own. When I have had, I had a guest one time cancel at the very last minute. And so I went ahead and went live, and it was just me. And it was a very, very short episode compared to what I normally have a guest on. It's, you know, a much more enjoyable episode for everyone. So there was a lot in your story, and thank you for sharing all that you shared. You mentioned the different jobs and volunteer places that you were and the difficulty that you had with some of the social aspects.
Mm-hmm.
When you were growing up, did you have similar situations that occurred? Yes. Did people say things to you?
Oh, God. Growing up, high school was hard because I really didn't fit in. All I knew was my brother had graduated before me, so the upper tier class, the seniors, the juniors, and the sophomores all knew to look out for me and keep an eye out on me. So, but my own classmates, my own freshmen, that's where I had, where I got bullied on and picked on. And that's where I pretended to be something I wasn't at the time.
Hmm.
I pretended to be, if you ever looked at my senior yearbook, I believe it was, and you look under my picture, it would say kid fresh, because I would make these guys laugh and they thought it was funny at the time. And it was the only way to keep them from, like, really picking on me. And even after high school, I remember telling you this story when you were on my show. I had a caseworker from Doors literally tell me to my face, in my mother's, she didn't think I'd achieve, I would be able to get through a 4-year university.
Right.
And I remember turning to my mother as we left, and I was just like, I've never been insulted in my life. And she's like, what are you going to do about this? And I'm like, I'm going to write them write her boss a letter saying I need a new caseworker because I've never felt insulted before.
Right. Yeah. And so there's two things that you said in that part that I hopefully I'll remember both of them. So I'm going to start with the worst one, the caseworker. There are so many times when guests tell me, or in my own experience where I've been involved with a conversation with other people, and comments are made like that. And I think in some ways, some people feel that they're being honest with you and they're laying it out like, this is definitely your future, you know? And that's one of the main reasons that I call this hashtag no limits, mm-hmm. because we don't know what sort of opportunities are going to present themselves. We don't know what kind of medical advances, miracles, technological science breakthroughs are going to happen. And so to say that someone is only going to hit this level, to me, it's cruel.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, I think also sometimes people say those things and they feel like they're somehow motivating you, like, prove me wrong. And I don't know that that's really a great way to go about it. I feel like encouragement would be.
You would have said, you will, because of your disability, you will struggle.
Yeah.
You'll have a hard time. You're going to struggle with coursework. You're going to find it hard. Maybe I wouldn't have taking it as an insult, but she literally flat out said, you're not equipped for a 4-year college.
Right.
I mean, I think, and you probably think the same way, is caseworkers need to learn how to talk to people with disabilities who are brighter than they really are.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I, again, it comes back to the title of the show, because when we speak positives into people's lives, they're much more likely to have those positives happen versus when we're speaking negative things into their life. And learning to think differently. So you said you attended an online university, mm-hmm. but I bet in that person's mind that said that to you, she had this very boxed idea of what a 4-year college looks like and how a student acts and how they access their schoolwork and, mm-hmm. you know, coursework, I guess, is more the proper term for college. But as you said, there's online universities. Now there's so many different ways. You don't have to go 4 years right after high school. You can take a class here or there, mm-hmm. you know, and extend how long it takes you to get that degree.
But I mean, that's what I did. I mean, I took, before I even went to college, I took courses here. I took a course there. I took courses that had nothing to do with my choice of program. I took an astronomy course at a community college. Mm-hmm. I took a data processing course. Just some courses so I can get the feel of what college course level will feel like.
Right. Exactly. And I did a similar thing. I knew when I was very young that I wanted to be a teacher, but I didn't have a great experience my senior year in high school. And I didn't really think I wanted to jump right into college. And so I started working full time and took a couple classes a semester because I knew to get my teaching degree, I had to get that, or to become a teacher, I had to get a teaching degree. And so, you know, I knew that I had to do it. But yeah, there's so many different ways to go about getting a degree. And so having that idea of maybe you're not going to achieve it the way that I achieved it, but you could still achieve it if you,
Yeah. I mean, in my book, about schooling, I've said one of the main things people should do, especially those who are on the spectrum, because college I know is going to be taxing on you. And one of the things I suggest to parents is that One, you identify the courses they want to take. Because otherwise, if they take courses they have no interest in, or they're forced to take, their interest is going to slowly wane to the point where they get bored and they just will flunk out of it because they have no focus.
Right.
Two, the most important thing I've mentioned is have them go to a community college and take their general eds. Mm-hmm. Get that out of the way. This way they can take their focus core classes in college and all the general ed, it will be cheaper to do it at a community college than suffer and struggle through general education courses in college and not have any focus. This way you can take your general ed as you go, and then once you get them all, you just transfer to your four-year college you want to go to.
Right. And I wouldn't recommend that just for people who learn differently. I would actually recommend that for everyone, because there's such a difference in how, I mean, just in general, college costs compared to when I went through college. And what people are spending on two-year degrees is what I spent on an entire four-year degree. And some of them are spending what I spent in all 4 years in 1 year, just depending on the college they go to. And so reducing their student loan debt, or, you know, not having student loan debt at all. But then, like you said, getting that feel for college, because it is so much different than high school. Most people go to college every day, all day long. Like, you go to high school classes all day.
And the other thing is, what kids don't realize is when you go to college, there isn't no pressure. You don't have your parents pressuring you. You are your own. You have to have an alarm clock to get you up. You have to get to your classes. And they need to understand that it's not like high school where everything's in one building. Everything's going to be scattered. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to walk 5 minutes to get to your building from where your dorm room is. I mean, you're going to have to also advocate. And one of the biggest things I talk about is you're going to have to advocate for yourself. And that's one of the biggest things. Before I even went to my college for my master's degree, I contacted the disability department. And I'm like, my name is so-and-so. I have autism. What can you do for me? What kind of services can you offer me? And they're like, oh, we can give you on-time testing. We can give you note takers. We can give you this. And I'm like, okay. And what was great about it is when I chose that school, my advisor set up a meeting. He would call me a month before, once a week, just to check in with me and then continue that when I was there.
That's awesome. And that's such a great point that on every campus across the United States, there is supposed to be a disabilities office. And if you have a diagnosed disability, or even if you don't have a medical diagnosis, but you had an IEP or a 504 going through school, reach out to, and some campuses, it's not necessarily called a disabilities office. It might be called student services or something along those lines. And so reach out to them, because you can get accommodations in college. And I think that's still a misnomer amongst high school and primary schools, is that, well, you're not going to get accommodations when you go to college. Yes, you can. They don't qualify, but they will provide them, because there's other federal laws that dictate what universities have to do.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is that parents need, and this is so important, any disability your child has, parents need to make this impose this on your child, is you need to tell them they have to advocate for themselves. They're not there to advocate for you. You're the adult. Once you went to college, you need to do it. Your parents can't do it for you anymore. If you don't advocate, the college is not going to know you have a disability and what you want. I made that clear. When I got there, when I was talking about my disability, I need this and I need this, because I get distracted very easily. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, even with on-time tests, I still get distracted.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't know why you wouldn't. That's just part of who you are. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, I know it probably feels redundant at this point, but I just want to hammer that home that when you get to college, if you've had services or if you have a disability and you never got services, I know because a lot of people, I've heard the stories too, that they didn't get services going through grade school or high school, or they're later in life college student, mm-hmm. and they believe that they have autism now or ADHD, and so they didn't get that when they were in school, still go to that student services office and let them know, hey, these are my characteristics. Is there something you can do, or what can you do to help me get through my classes? And Fran says, and by the way, she, I don't know if you saw it earlier, but she said, howdy from Southern Illinois. She's watching us live. And she says, it's true. We must advocate for ourselves as we know our needs.
I mean, it is so important because when I was in college, I had one professor who I fought with because he did, I would go to him and I'm like, listen, I need help. I don't understand this. He's like, I can't help. If I help you, I got to help everyone, and I can't do that. I'm like, well, but this is in my thing with the disability department that you must help me. He's like, I'm sorry, Miles, but I can't do this. I need to help everyone. I'm like, can we just have some office time? People don't need to know you're helping me, but can I just go to your, we meet in your office time and you can just go over some of the stuff.
Right.
I finally broke down to him and he tried to help. And then he introduced me to one of the other professors that was lecturing that same course. And he tried to help. That was one of the few courses that I failed. I should have known at the time of the course that it was going to be a little bit over my head, but I figured, hey, I take a chance and see if I can grasp it.
Yeah. And that's awesome. And that's, I never got to part two of my question from earlier. So I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to cross my fingers and hopefully help me remember. But I want to talk about that because you talk about that in your book, that you have to take chances because mm-hmm. you just don't know. So talk about that. Talk about your travels. Talk about all the things.
I talk about chances a lot. And in my book, I mean, that's, it's not out yet, but that's one of the big things I talk about is we need to take risks as those of us who are autistic, because if we don't step outside of our comfort zone, the world's just going to pass us by. I've taken so many risks. I have traveled across Europe on my own. I learned to navigate foreign countries. And I had to swallow my pride at one point, and I had to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And I remember a story. I was in Italy, and I thought I can step out of my hotel, memorize the landmarks and the street names, and I'd be able to get back to my hotel. It didn't help. It was getting dark, and I needed to find a way back to my hotel. I was right by the train station, and there was a police station in it. I go into the police station, and I'm like, I need some help. And they're like, there's only one person here who speaks English, and she is busy right now. And I'm sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm like, it's getting dark. I can't wait forever. There was a guy behind a window, and I walk up to him, and I'm like, can you help me? He's like, don't speak English. I'm like, you don't have to, I don't need you to speak English. Does this road lead to my hotel? And I pointed, and I told him the name of the hotel, and he's like, I'm like, sì, grazie. Mm-hmm. And he smiled, and I left, and I followed the road to my hotel. And I remember something my well-being advisor had told me, and that is, do not panic, because when you panic, everything just goes out the window and you just get over nervous, and then you make things worse for yourself.
And so how did you not panic? I mean, was there something that you said to yourself, like, you know, I've got to stay calm, or did it just, I can't imagine it just happened.
I stepped outside of the police station. I leaned against the pole for a minute. just took a deep breath and I just said to myself, do not panic. You know how, now you know how to get back to your hotel. Just follow the road. And I just kept myself calm. And it's like the same thing when I traveled. I would get anxiety when I would get to the airport. And I just kept saying to myself, everything will be better once you're on the plane and in the and get to the hotel. And that kind of went through my mind. And the minute I got on the plane and I put my luggage away and I sat back in my seat, I was more relaxed. And I even helped this one woman who was flying, who was nervous. And I said, listen, if you want, I'm not hitting on you. You can hold my hand. I know you're scared. Just hold my hand. It will be over soon. And it was like a 45, I remember it was like a 45 minute flight.
That's awesome. And so there's a couple things in that. I love that you caveated it with, I'm not hitting on you. And that probably came from the things that you had learned from some of those other situations that you spoke of earlier, and that you were willing to take that chance and reach out and be vulnerable to someone else and say, you know,
I saw her gripping the seat and with a bumpy ruffle. I leaned over to her. I looked over to her and said, are you okay? She's like, I'm a little nervous. I don't like flying as much. I'm doing this for work. I'm like, if you want, you can hold onto my hand, or you can just look at me or just listen to my voice and I'll help you get through this flight. And she's That's like, awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And you know, it's so important, and I congratulate you for taking risks. And I know that for a lot of even neurotypical people, taking a risk is not something that they do. And it's just because they don't want to, and they don't feel like they have a need to. I really appreciate that you have stepped out of that comfort zone and that you are encouraging others to do the same. What would you say to, and I still have my idea, I'm gonna talk about this a little bit. What would you say to a parent who has a child with autism and they are very routine and they want the child to try a different food or a different toy or a different television or whatever it is? They just want them to try something different. What do you recommend to that parent or steps that they could take?
First thing I would tell them is don't force anything on them. You can't force us to learn something new. Mm-hmm. It's got to be something we attach to. We have a fascination with. If you take them out shopping or you take them out, and this was going through my head when I thought I was going to give a speech at the conference coming next year. And that is, take your child, when you take them out, watch their eyes, watch their expressions on their face. If they start to get excited about something, they're excited about that. If you take them around and there's a construction site and they get all excited about seeing the construction trucks, go, oh, maybe buy a video about construction trucks. Maybe buy them a few trucks. But the big thing I want them to know is don't force them to do things they don't want to do. Because that will set them back into almost a meltdown. And when that comes, it's going to be a while before they come out of it.
Great point. Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back now to when you were talking earlier about your school experience. And one of the things that you mentioned is that in your senior yearbook underneath your name, it would say Kid Fresh. Mm-hmm. And that it said that because you wanted to make people laugh, that you became someone
that you were not
in order for people to hopefully like you. And the reason I want to come back to them, there's a couple of reasons I want to come back to this. One is because I want people to understand that just because we see something on the outside doesn't mean that's truly what the meaning behind that behavior is, mm-hmm. or that that's really how the person feels. And two, I want people to, I want educators really to hear that and really listen to that, because so often a child like yourself who is cutting up in class and, you know, the class clown sort of title is doing it to mask a skill deficit, a social deficit, something else. And so I just wanted to talk about that a little bit more. Were you, I mean, I guess in a way you were aware that that's what you were doing was to,
no,
to change.
I did. In high school, I knew nothing about masking.
Okay.
I knew nothing about my autism. We didn't know I was autistic until my late 20s. So my high school years, I didn't know about it, but as time went on and I learned about what masking was, it kind of occurred to me that maybe that's what I was doing, was pretending to be something I wasn't just so I can fit in.
Okay. And what did that do to your self-esteem? I mean, obviously you recognized that you were doing that. You were making people cut up because you got better reactions from that than just walking around being who you were.
It kind of lowered my self-esteem at the time, but I knew it was my senior year. I knew I won't see these kids again. I knew high school, as many people say, high school is a certain part of your life that a lot of people don't want to remember. And I can tell you, and this is what I want parents to hear, and this is so very important. High school and college, totally different. The kids in college are so different. When I went away, my first time away to college, I got targeted and picked on a lot. But when I went away the second time for my master's in England, it was a whole entirely different set of people. I was mature, I was older, and I was treated like that. I wasn't targeted, I wasn't picked on, no one knew any better. Everyone was older, everyone was cool. When your kid goes, if your child goes to college, I want you to keep an eye on them, make sure they join societies or clubs that fit their interests, and make sure they speak up if they feel they're being targeted or picked on by other kids, because otherwise they're going to retract into their shell and they're going to wind up going down that hole of depression.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all great advice. So there's something that you mentioned in response to a statement on your show that I had made. And I said that a lot of parents of children who learn differently, one of their biggest fears is what's going to happen to their child when they are no longer here. Do you remember how you responded to that?
Yes, I think I do. I responded by saying that most, you see it from the parent's view, but you didn't see it from the child's view. And what we feel is, it's not just being alone. It's when you're autistic, it's also having friends. It's socializing. It's what's going to happen to me when my parents are gone? Who's going to look after myself if I can't look after myself?
Yeah, and that statement just blew me away because, as I said, and you reiterated it, that I've always thought about that from the parents' perspective because that's who I have spoken to. I never considered it from the child's perspective. And I'll be, you know, as a neurotypical person, I was sad when my dad passed away, and I will be sad when my mom passes away. I don't worry about, though, what my life is going to look like or how that death is going to affect my livelihood and my lifestyle and all of that. And so that was such an eye opener for me. And I would really like for you to, if you can, elaborate more on how that thought is helping you, if it is, do anything differently to prepare for that possible time.
Well, that was one of the reasons why I went away to school. And I don't think I've talked about this in the book I'm writing, but I wanted to see if I can live on my own. I wanted to see if I can manage. I know after my mom is gone, I'll be taken care of by my brother and sister-in-law and her family. And I still have other family. But I wanted to know when that time comes, can I handle being alone? And being away from home for a year was the perfect amount of time. I didn't share a room with anybody. We all had our own rooms, or suites as they're called, or flats. And I was in charge of my own life, doing my own laundry, keeping my room clean, getting to classes, managing money and time. And I knew at the point after I graduated that I am capable of doing it. And for those parents out there listening, this is an important thing. If your kids want to go away, talk to them first and say, why? Ask them why. Because if they want to go away to college, this will teach them to be on their own.
Sorry, I had muted me because as I told you, I'm in a weird location and I thought I heard somebody coming in. So, sorry, couldn't answer you.
No problem.
Yeah, I think that is so important. And I, in my book, I had one of the families that they told me that story of, you know, our son is probably going to outlive us and he needs care and he needs support. And when he was in his last couple of years of high school, they started looking at group homes mm-hmm. and those kinds of environments. And then his turned out that within just a few months of high school, they had applied right after he graduated and he was accepted already. And the parents weren't really ready for that, but they thought it's better for him to live apart from us so that if we go before him, he already has a new home environment. He already has a support system in place because of where he lives. He's not going to have to move on top of having to deal with the death of his parents. And so, you know, again, that was all from the parents' perspective. But when you did all of those things, what did that do for your self-esteem?
When I went away for school, that really boosted my self-esteem. As I started getting into the routine of seeing my disability advisor, seeing my well-being advisor, my disability advisor had set me up with a therapist for a couple of weeks, had set me up with a well-being advisor, and they helped me with things like dealing with money, dealing with schoolwork. I remember I had two friends at the time. One of them, one day we were walking together and she looks at me and she's like, this must be hard for you. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, you come all the way across the ocean. You're taking on a very hard course and you're dealing with dialects from all over the world. Like, you're right. It is hard for me because for my mind to adjust to everything and being on my own. And then I had another friend say the same thing. She's like, it must be hard dealing with all these different dialects and people from all over the world. And you're here on your own. I'm like, yeah, it is hard because for my mind to comprehend all this, it's shocking. I mean, I remember once I walked into our convenience store on campus and I saw kids buying alcohol and I kind of got shocked a little bit. I'm like, wait a minute. Here in England, their drinking age is lower than ours in the U.S. So I got that kind of culture shock all over again.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing about that is exactly what you said. It's a culture shock, but then we have to realize that just because we have certain rules in our country, in our state, in our town, in all the way down to even our home, that doesn't mean that that's the rule everywhere.
Yeah.
And being able to find that out and adjust to that as well. My husband and I also had the privilege to live in England for 3 years, and it was fantastic. But there were a lot of things that we had to learn because those were English rules versus mm-hmm. American rules.
I mean, one of the biggest things I've learned is England has no air conditioning.
Right? There are a few places that do, but for the most part, their temperature doesn't.
And my mom is like, how are you going to handle with sleep, with everything, with your tinnitus? And I'm like, oh, they'll just have the air conditioning running. I get into my building, and I realize, oh, they have no air conditioning whatsoever. And I remember when I was there, we had the hottest day. It was like 90 degree weather in the summer, and it was extraordinarily hot. I kept my windows open all the time and my shades closed because bugs would fly in and all this. And I remember the school putting out a pamphlet saying, please don't undo your safety latches for your windows. They're there for a reason. If you want to cool your room, put a bucket of ice under your window. And I'm thinking to myself, the windows open upwards. They don't open downwards for the air to blow down onto them. So you guys aren't thinking correctly.
Well, that's good that you figured that out. And that's funny that you said there were bugs, because there were these little tiny itty bitty bugs.
No, we had bees and all sorts of things flying into bees and stuff flying into my room.
Oh, okay.
I remember coming in once, and we had, because the foreign students have no regard for the laws and things. They would yank open the doors instead of using their key fob, and the door would break, and they would leave the door open until it got fixed. And one time we had a magpie fly in, got stuck up on the third floor, and you just keep hearing it flying into the window.
Poor thing. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a bird, so that's not an insect. But yeah, I remember us having our windows open most of the year. Because there weren't bugs where we were. None that were, I mean, they don't have mosquitoes somehow.
No.
That was definitely an okay thing to have your window open and not have to worry about mosquitoes. But our windows didn't even have screens. So, you know, that was another way that the bugs could have gotten in. But anyway, I digress about that. So we have just a few minutes left. I want to talk about your website. I want to make sure that people know how to find you if they want to listen to your podcast. So your website is AspergerStudio.com. So first of all, why is it Asperger's? You keep talking about you have a diagnosis of autism.
Asperger's, autism, same thing, same terminology. Asperger's was the original term. People nowadays say autism.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so now go ahead and talk about what's on your website, what's on your, and if you want, I can pull up the website and show different things, or you can just talk about it.
Asperger Studio is my blog. That's where I post my podcast on my blog, and then I post it on my podcast host.
Okay.
This is where you'll find the show notes, the playlists, any information coming up, any new guests coming up. I'll usually try to do before the month starts. If I have guests already lined up, I'll put up a post that'll show who's coming up for the month. It'll have all my entire travel story, from traveling through Europe from country to country, my schooling experiences. It's all broken down into different sections.
Awesome. So I am looking and I don't see my episode. Oh, here it is over here on the side.
If you go to, if you go under show notes, you should be the last.
Yeah, I did find it. I was looking in a different place. I was going to try to present it really quick, and something is being weird on my screen here. All right, let me just grab this really fast and show. Just to plug a little bit here. So, yeah, here I am. I thought our episode was really good, but, you know, I felt like you and Michelle asked really fabulous questions and that we had a really good discussion. So, again, I wanted to thank you for having me on your show.
Actually, Michelle started out as a guest.
Really?
Yeah, and right after our show, she said she liked it a lot and that she feels she'd like to do this more, just talk. Mm-hmm. And became really good friends. And she's one of the other few people that have like become really good friends who started out as a guest. I have a friend named April who was on my show twice, who's autistic and she's got two autistic sons. And we became friends, so we would have a monthly chat.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and so Fran, who has commented here, she and I actually have a podcast together. Well, it's a live stream like this, and it's called Friday with Fran. So I'm sure you can figure out what day of the week it's on. And mm-hmm. She and I just talk about special education and special needs. And that came from her also having been a guest and then us talking. And just we knew each other outside of the live stream. And I said, you know, you have so much knowledge in a different perspective than mine. So how about you and I do one together? And and I think Michelle is coming on. I just have to get the logistics figured out with her. So she's also going to be a guest in the future. Mm-hmm. And then there was someone else and his name is escaping me, but that you introduced me to and from England, I think.
Yeah. And my friend Dan Jones.
Dan, yes. Yes. And so working again logistically to have him be on here as well. So Reed, thank you so very much for sharing your story. I just want to make sure that if you have any last comments, now is your opportunity to share.
Nope, nothing.
All right. That was perfect. Okay. Thank you, Fran, for joining us and for your comments today. And anyone else who was watching, let us know what your thoughts are about this episode. Fran says, thank you for being real. I'm going to pop this up here really quick. And next week, I have a guest, but they had to reschedule. So hopefully I'll be back. But if not, be sure to join me the week after. And I appreciate you all and have a wonderful week. Thanks, Reed.
Not a problem.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.